We're talking edge rushers this week. They used to be at the top of every defensive coordinator's wish list, but are they falling out of favor in the NFL? Plus, whether that Eagles wide nine has staying power, the future of Myles Garrett, and of course, our ranking of the top edge rushers in football today, all on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Grimm. He is Andy Benoit. We are talking about edge rushers this week, and we will unveil our ranking. I do want to note something right at the top, though. Andy has a bit of a different connection, so he will sound like he is underwater. That is because he is at the the Biosphere Project where he's calling from this week.
I am calling from nearby the, I almost said San Diego Chargers. I'm here because they're the Los Angeles Chargers right now. But and you know what I asked Dean Spanos today? I asked him if he's inadvertently called themselves the San Diego Chargers. What do you think his answer to that was?
Yes.
His answer is no. They claim nobody in the building has done that.
I don't believe that for a second.
I don't believe that either.
No one's going to admit to it. You're going to immediately, apologize, and everyone's going to pretend they didn't hear it if it happens, but no way that happens.
He said they've got a lot of new employees and staffers because they're L.A. people now, not San Diego people, and that was all he said. Yeah, I don't know if I quite, but I believed him overall. I thought it was a good interview, but I find it hard to believe people aren't slipping up on that at least a tiny bit.
I find it so hard to believe that I just do not believe it.
Well, there you go.
So we're starting our edge rusher show. I guess it's appropriate you're in LA with the Chargers because they do have really good edge rushers there. But I guess we're just starting the show by proclaiming Dean Spanos to be a liar.
Well, you're claiming that. I am on record as saying that I have been treated very well and their hospitality here is excellent. And I'm looking forward to writing the article about the Los Angeles Chargers.
There you go. All right, we're doing the same format. Not enough of you complained. We actually, I don't know, we didn't get a lot of complaints about the new format on the position rankings show. If you want to complain, you can complain. We honestly want to know. I can't imagine it's 100% approval on this new one, but we're doing the same thing that we did with the running backs last week. We're going to talk some topics, we'll do the rankings, and then we'll have lightning-ish round at the end. But let's start right up top here, Andy, because this is something I have wondered over the last couple of years. And I don't want to say I'm recognizing big widespread trends, but are we reaching a point where we're moving ever so slightly away from edge rushers as being the irreplaceable elite building block talents on a defense? Because whether it's A, it's just very difficult to find really good edge burners, and B, I remember a couple years ago, I believe this was Sean McDermott, was talking about how he likes having the interior rushers because the very basic fact, it is a shorter distance from point A to point B, point B being the quarterback. So,
yeah.
you gotta invest so much in an edge rusher. Are we seeing more and more teams who sort of planned on not building around their edge rushers, and now we're seeing maybe a slight philosophical shift where edge rushers are maybe not the same elite values that they were maybe 5 years ago?
I think what we're seeing is a greater willingness to build around other positions. I think every team would still take an edge rusher if you presented it, and if 32 teams theoretically had a chance to pay Von Miller what he cost in Denver, so 31 other teams, would they take Von Miller? And I bet you 25 to 28 of them would. So if it's the right edge rusher, you're still going to pay, and he's still worth the premium. But what we're seeing, and maybe it started a little bit with J.J. Watt in the last seven years or so, but teams that have interior defensive ends or even defensive tackles, guys that play three technique, four technique, where they're lined up kind of shaded over an offensive tackle, five technique, these what I would call these almost inside-type defensive ends, those guys have become a lot more prevalent. Calais Campbell's a good example, and he can play off the edge at times, but I don't view him as a true edge rusher. But he is a dominant player, and there are a number of guys that play that Calais Campbell type of role that are becoming a bigger part of their defense. So I would imagine that would be what we're really seeing is just an expansion of scheme to include more defensive linemen. You're not quite as dependent solely on edge rushers as you used to be.
I was going to say, over the last couple of years, and this is all anecdotal because I haven't charted this in any way, shape, or form, but I feel like you're seeing more creativity up front as far as twists and stunts, and that's kind of how you're getting it done in the pass rush when you don't have your Von Miller or your Khalil Mack.
Well, and I think what's neat about those guys is they're also some of the best twists and stunt guys in the NFL. These guys are wearing go over on our top 10. Almost all of them are going to be the focal point of their team's game plan pass rush concepts. Mm-hmm. So twists and stunts where one defensive lineman attacks a blocker and then the other defensive lineman loops behind that teammate of his. Those concepts work really well with guys that are laterally agile and explosive. So Joey Bosa, Mack, Von Miller, you can see that. Now, what I think to add to your point, though, Gary, what's interesting is the teams that don't have very good defensive linemen, they'll use those twists and stunts, or a lot of times it's defensive line slants where one guy's in the B gap, now I'm covering the A gap. The guy next to me was in the C gap, now he's responsible for the B gap. We're moving the D line. They'll use that as a tactic to compensate for not having very good defensive linemen. I know Matt Eberflus, for the new D coordinator for the Indianapolis Colts, he's a big proponent of that. He believes if you're deficient along the D-line, you need to scheme and be more creative with how you use your four-man D-line. So we're seeing some of that. What's interesting is a quick strike passing game negates a lot of this. And as the league becomes more comfortable with misdirection and quick strike concepts, does that change the way teams will use their defensive line? Because these stunts and twists take a little while to unfold sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, this next topic, I was not going to tie it directly to the Patriots, but I'm just going to go ahead and tie it to the Patriots. A team like the Patriots, who they have basically taken their edge guys and just said, you know, we want them to be edge setters. We're going to worry about stopping the run. And really, I mean, the Patriots, I don't really think they've generated a consistent pass rush in any way. I mean, they win in coverage in that aspect, but you know, in this day and age, the Patriots can obviously get away with things that other teams can't because you have Tom Brady and you're going to score points. But they've been one of the better scoring defenses the last couple of years. Is there some, I don't know, philosophical reason outside of you have Tom Brady and you're playing in a league with or playing in a division with not very good teams, where teams might just say, you know, we're going to, in 2019, in 2018, we're going to worry about stopping the run, and we will let the lack of a pass rush sort of be our weakness and still hold teams in check?
Well, the Patriots are very – I don't think I've seen another team that has done it that way as consistently as the Patriots. And they don't set out to say, okay, let's have an average pass rush, but they don't set out to say, let's invest 1,000% of our salary cap into the pass rush either, like some teams feel they have to. So they're a bend but don't break defense in New England, and some of that's probably the luxury of having Tom Brady. You're willing to give up some field position if you're confident that your offense can consistently get that field position back for you. So Belichick believes in fundamentally sound defense when he's between about the 30-yard lines or so, when he's in the middle of the field. Then when you get into that scoring range against them, you'll start to see a few more wrinkles with New England, and they always do wrinkles with their defensive fronts, but it's more from a running down perspective. When they get into field goal range, you'll start to see some pass rushing wrinkles from the Patriots. But yeah, overall, I haven't seen a defense, Gary, that has such mediocrity in its pass rush and doesn't blitz a whole lot in order to offset that mediocrity, and it works for them. Name one other team that's even close like that. The Jets, maybe, years ago, but they didn't have great edge rushers. I'm thinking the Rex Ryan Jets, but they were so blitz-heavy still that's a bad answer. I don't know what other team can play like New England and succeed with the bend but don't break without a pass rush.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look, when I was writing down that topic, I was sort of brainstorming, okay, who else does this Patriot style? You'd presume maybe going forward the Lions would do that since they have Matt Patricia there now. But it's strange, and in a league where You know, it's sorry for the cliche, it's a copycat league. You figure more teams would be looking at the Patriots and saying, huh, maybe this is how we'll go about it, and no one's really done that in the last couple of years.
Well, and let's also keep something in mind. The Patriots, they have guys that can be productive. Trey Flowers will show up. Deatrick Weiss last year did some things early in the season. They've got guys that can situationally fill the roles at times. But, yeah, they didn't choose to retain Chandler Jones when he was at his height. And he's now become one of the best players in the NFL in Arizona. So, maybe teams will take a look at it and say, but all it really gets into, Gary, is what position do you invest in? Defensive ends cost a lot of money, but so do cornerbacks. And if you don't have great defensive ends, then you need those cornerbacks. You have to have somebody who wins and controls the perimeter of the field for you. And New England, they invest a lot at the cornerback position, just not the defensive end position.
Sort of on the other side of the spectrum here, you have the Raiders, who I think they are probably, I think, easily among the top five edge player pairs here with Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin, and yet this has been a bad defense the last couple of years. Is it just a matter of they happen to be really bad everywhere else? I mean, they're bad in the linebacking core. They're not very good at cornerback. Or is this some sort of larger philosophical shift you can look at and say they maybe didn't build it the way you should build it?
The Raiders are the other team that befuddles me. They're almost the anti-Patriots in that they have excellent edge rushers, and then they're not productive as an overall defense. And I have the same question you have, which is why? Why is that the case? Because, and it's not like Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin are overrated. When you put on the film, those guys are as every bit dynamic as we believe them to be and as their stats indicate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yet here the Raiders sit year after year with a mediocre defense. It's not a great cast around those two. We could probably have the same discussion about the Chargers, too. San Diego, there I go again. Los Angeles could not stop the run last year, and they've got two of the best defensive ends. And yeah, I think they've got the best defensive end tandem in football. So edge rushers in and of themselves cannot carry a defense, but I guess name one position that could carry a defense. Would you take, Gary, a dynamic, and it's going to depend on your scheme a little bit, but let's say you're starting from zero, so you're going to build your scheme around your guys. Would you take a dynamic edge rusher or a shutdown corner first?
Since we're talking about the Raiders right now, I feel like I want to say shutdown corner first. And I get, you know, it's different degrees of shutdown. You know, would you rather have Von Miller 2014 or Darrelle Revis 2011 or whenever his prime would have been? But I think you're going to see more and more teams go with coverage, because I guess if you're as bad in coverage as some teams are, and maybe the Raiders have been that the last couple of years, if you can't cover for 3 seconds, it really doesn't matter what your pass rush is doing.
Well, and it's the Browns conversation when they took Denzel Ward this year over Bradley Chubb. They said, we went back and watched the film and we thought Myles Garrett had a whole bunch of sacks taken away from him because the ball got out a little quicker than you want. And if Garrett had decent coverage behind him on some of those plays, he's got huge numbers, and our pass rush looks a lot better and is a lot more productive than it is right now. So that was their philosophy behind the whole thing. The edge rush and cornerback position, it's a hard one to answer. It's a very philosophical question because those two positions are inherently different. Edge rushers are aggressors. They're the attackers, and the blockers react to them. Cornerbacks are the reactors. They have to react to wide receivers. They'll go wherever the receivers dictate. So it's not a controlling position, but if you've got one that can handle it one-on-one, you take away the offense's ability to control the game. So it's just a matter of which way you want to go after football. If a team wants to take away their edge rusher, your edge rusher, if an offense wants to do that, it can do that. I watched film with Cameron Jordan Super Bowl week, and we watched his wild card game against Carolina, and as the game progressed, that he was dominant in that one, they slid the entire line his way and then double teamed him with Christian McCaffrey and Ed Dixon at tight end. So sliding the line, plus a linebacker or plus a running back and a tight end, it amounted to a triple team. And they did. They took Jordan out of the game effectively, but everybody else had opportunities on the Saints. So it's the give or take. It's what you value, what you don't value, and there's no right or wrong answer to it. The better your players, the easier all these conversations are, obviously. And edge rushers, that's why they're always going to be paid a lot of money.
Last question in the opening segment here. Jim Schwartz. You look back, Jim Schwartz's defenses, I should specify here, defense in Tennessee and the defense he had in Detroit sort of slid back as time went on, that wide nine approach he uses. And in Buffalo, you know, he was there for 1 year. They were very good in that 1 year. And then they had a huge philosophical shift with Rex Ryan coming in. So we'll kind of set Buffalo aside because they're just not there just wasn't really the time there. As far as this Eagles defense goes, and it's a little bit loaded because obviously Brandon Graham is now hurt coming into the year. They've lost Vinnie Curry. Timmy Jernigan is probably going to miss some time early on. So they might start slow just because of health issues. But is there a reason that these Jim Schwartz defenses seem to slide back a little bit when you look back at Tennessee and you look back at Detroit? Or was it just, you know, was it not the scheme and more, you know, things happening with the personnel? Or is it just the way things play out sometimes?
Well, I think to run a Jim Schwartz scheme, you put a little bit of an extra burden on your second-level defenders, especially your linebackers, because the way he plays up front, it's stop the run on the way to the quarterback. Even if it's a running down, that tends to be their mindset. And so where Schwartz is different than everyone else is, you've talked about that wide nine, that's a pass rushing stance that he employs not just on one side of the formation like most teams, but on both sides of the formation. Both defensive ends are wide nines in most of Schwartz's schemes. Now, those guys serve as the edge setters. Even though they're playing the run on the way to the QB, which implies they're pass rushers, their body presence out there still sets the edge. You can't run outside zone against a wide nine defensive end. He's going to get up the field on you and take away the corner. So now it's a between the tackles run game, which means your linebackers have to step up and stop those runs. And if they're unable to do that and teams find a way to get to them, or you're just so-so at that spot, it's going to be a problem for you at some point. And that is probably, Gary, part of the reason the Eagles were looking at inside linebackers in this draft. Even though they're relatively healthy, not healthy, but they're strong at that position. If Jordan Hicks is healthy, then they're healthy and very strong at that position. But that is one they'll probably need to continually replenish with a specific type of player. You don't need the next Junior Seau in there, but you need a solid first and second down presence if you're going to be a wide nine defense.
Yeah. All right, Andy, hang on. In one moment, the top 10 edge rushers in the NFL coming up. But first, at Buffalo Wild Wings, we'll admit we often go overboard with our limited time offerings. We just can't help ourselves. Take our new signature sampler for $15. You get wings and three shareable options like fried pickles or cheese curds. Then there's our aptly named over-the-top nachos, a literal mountain of crispy tortilla chips loaded with your choice of pulled pork or honey barbecue grilled chicken, corn, jalapenos, and more. Then top it all off with our platinum margarita. Go overboard with us today at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly. All right, it's that time of the show. We are going to unveil the top 10, well, more than 10. We have 19 guys who got votes, but the top edge rushers in the NFL. If this is the first time you're listening to our show, or at least a position rankings series we do, the way we do it, basic AP poll style, we each cast a ballot of 15. If you get a first place vote, you get 15 points. If you get a 15th place vote, you get 1 point, and everything in between. The twist is that Andy Benoit, being that he knows twice as much about football than the rest of us, his vote counts as double. So I will start with the others receiving votes. I will once again give the hint that the first guy's name I read, he will be 11th in the rankings if you are keeping track at home. And then I'll run through the rest. As I said, we had 19 guys get votes this week. So other receiving votes, we had Terrell Suggs, Justin Houston, Miles Garrett, Whitney Mercilus, Yannick Ngakoue, Ryan Kerrigan, Cameron Wake, Danielle Hunter, and Olivier Vernon. Andy, any major beef with any of those guys?
I don't have any personal beef with any of them, but I do have some beef with Suggs not being on our top 10 list. And I wish I had inflated my... Yeah, and look, we got a lot of guys. I think I had him, what, number 7 or something like that, maybe even 8 or 9. There are a lot of quality players, and we're not doing just pure edge rushers, right? We're doing edge defenders.
Edge defenders, yeah. So all-around game here.
Right, and so if we're doing edge defenders, Terrell Suggs, the more I study football, Gary, and I'll often watch Baltimore Ravens film during the offseason to study it because they do just enough wrinkles schematically that you can learn a lot and learn the concepts. The more I do that, the better Terrell Suggs seems to be in my mind. The more I learn football, the more I appreciate Suggs. Let me put it that way. He does every little important thing as well as anyone in the league. He is the ultimate dirty job player. He's an explosive player. He still makes his own dynamic plays. He ought to be. I hope I'm a Hall of Fame voter by the time he retires and is eligible, which I think will be in 8 or 9 years or so when we're talking Suggs for the Hall of Fame. Yeah. He ought to go in their first ballot because he is a football player.
He is. I mean, he's aged unbelievably well. Even for a guy who you'd look at and say, like, yeah, he'll probably age well. I mean, he'll be 36 in October, and he's still excellent. I did neglect to give two quick notes before this one. First of all, Ryan Taylor is our third voter this week. He's one of our researchers. He is tremendous at what he does, and I thought his ballot was pretty good, and I do not bring that up right now because I want to pick on him for anything. The other note is we always have the conversation because you do a defensive line show as well, so some guys who you might think you see here, Michael Bennett's the guy we talk about every year. We group him with the defensive linemen, not the edge guys. We did the same with Vinny Curry and Calais Campbell. Jadeveon Clowney's a guy we had done with defensive line in past years. This year we made him an edge rusher, so he will you'll hear his name during the top 10 portion of this, but you know, if you got to the end of the show and you're a big Calais Campbell fan, he wasn't part of this. That's why he's not on the rankings. He'll be in the defensive line rankings. We're going to talk about Miles Garrett in a couple minutes, by the way, too, when we get to the lightning-ish round. But for right now, I think let's start counting down the top 10. 10 would be Everson Griffin. 9, Brandon Graham. 8, Melvin Ingram. 7, DeMarcus Lawrence. 6, Chandler Jones. Let's talk to DeMarcus Lawrence real quick, Andy. Obviously, monster year in his contract year, and this will likely be another contract year for him, as he has been franchise tagged. What was the difference between him and in 2017, as opposed to DeMarcus Lawrence's first couple years of his career?
I think he's just a classic case of a guy that has progressed over the course of his career. I think he's just gotten better with experience and age. He is a very good run down player. He's very good on first and second down. And last year he became a more dynamic edge guy. I don't know if he's quite a true edge bender, one of those pliable guys that can contort and twist the corner consistently. Some might argue he is, and I'm not going to put up a big fight on that. He's certainly right on the cusp of that, but he plays strong and he's mechanically sound and getting better. And he's in a scheme that he's been in the same scheme for several years, and that helps too. And he's got Rod Marinelli coaching him, one of the best individual D-line teachers, the highest regarded in all of football. So Lawrence started a little bit slow, and now he's come on strong. I don't think it's the case. You always got to be a little careful with those guys. Are they contract year players, overachievers when the money's on the line? And we've seen that a lot with defensive linemen for whatever reason. We've seen it at other guys over the years. I don't think Lawrence will be that. I think what we're seeing from him is genuine, but I was glad that Dallas franchise tagged him because why not? Why not use that franchise tag if you can?
Yep. Let's go top five here. Number five, Jadeveon Clowney. Number four, Joey Bosa. Number three, Cam Jordan. You can probably guess who the top two are, but I do want to stop right there. I want to talk about Clowney real quick. They used him, and granted, the Texans were just decimated by injury last year, but they did use him on the edge more last season. Do you like him better there? I know you've always liked him more as an interior rusher.
Well, then what do you think my answer will be about liking him better on the edge?
Maybe. Well, we're going to get to a guy that I think you've changed your mind about a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good comp. Yes. Yep. I like Clowney inside. I think he's a better interior rusher. And if he played three technique, I could see that becoming a really outstanding role for him. Now, the question is he better with his hand in the dirt or from a two-point stance? And that will impact how they employ him, although in Houston and their diamond front that we talk so much about, where they put five defensive linemen, they're not all D linemen, but they're five defenders across from five blockers and just dictate matchups. A lot of time, the guy at the three technique position does stand up in a two-point stance. Bernardrick McKinney is usually one of those guys, and I think that's where Clowney is most effective. He has explosive dynamic strength, and he jolts you on initial contact. He's not pliable, Gary. He doesn't have the flexibility, and he doesn't have a huge repertoire of pass rush moves. He's just a very strong, explosive man who happens to be in an athletic body, not in a nose tackles type of body. It works great for him, but what we're describing is a guy who stylistically fits much better on the inside versus the edge. But if you don't have a lot of options on the edge, I could understand how those injuries and how they started playing him outside more because of that.
So Joey Bosa was four. Clowney was five. Joey Bosa four. Cam Jordan three. Cam Jordan, I feel, and I don't want to say like, oh, Andy, you were down on Cam Jordan. You just always consider Cam Jordan, I believe when we've done this in the past, you've usually voted him somewhere in like the 8 to 12 range, somewhere on that second tier. But you were, I mean, you were quite high on him last year, and this was before you met with him, and he got to lobby for himself. But he was as dominant as he has ever been last season, and we always talked about him as a guy. You know, he's not that super explosive edge burner type. And maybe that makes you a little bit more biased against him because, you know, it's not quite what you see when you watch a Von Miller or a Khalil Mack. But at this point, it's almost you sort of can't argue against the results from Cam Jordan anymore.
Correct. He's another one who's improved a lot. In fact, the guys I voted first team all pro last year were the guys that I've said have improved. It was DeMarcus Lawrence and Cam Jordan was my other one. And Jordan was actually a relatively easy vote. I just go through my film notes and read up on everybody and let the film notes decide. And I didn't have to do a whole lot of process of elimination with Cam Jordan. He was in very clearly. He showed up every game. He hasn't ever been a true, fully pliable, explosive guy. His initial step is not as good as the initial step of the guys who top are the top two guys on our list. Mm-hmm. But his second and third step are probably every bit as good as those guys, and he's gotten quicker at everything he's done as his career has progressed. I thought he'd become a three technique ultimately because he was so average early on as an athlete outside. He was just very middle of the road athletically. He's played more athletically. Guys can get better and become more athletic as they get more comfortable. And I don't know if there's a more improved defensive player in the NFL over the last 5 years. If we start 5 years ago up to this date, I don't know who's been better than Cam Jordan in that regard.
Yeah, he's I mean, look, he's a special player, and you can certainly look at that Saints defense and the way they turned it around. He's a big reason they were on the cusp of that going into last season. Our top two, as I think they've been every year we've done this series, Khalil Mack is two, Von Miller is one. I don't know. Is there anything different you think of Khalil Mack at this point? And the other thing I was going to ask you is Von Miller, do you see any signs of decline with Von Miller? Because not that he's necessarily on the verge of it, but he's been around for a little while at this point.
He has.
He's 29 now.
Right, he's 20. I was Googling his age as you were talking because I'm thinking, man, he's been here since 2011. He started hot right out of the gates and never stopped. I haven't seen any signs of decline with him, and he's an example of what you can do. He's the best edge bender in the NFL, but he's not only that. You can do a lot of things schematically with Von Miller as a stand-up player, as an interior rusher. I think that's going to extend his career as he ages, and he'll age at some point, but we haven't seen and he's only 29, so he's got a long, he might have three or four more years of top-shelf dominance. But as he ages, it'll be interesting to see, does his game expand to keep him on the field with more of a savvy pass-rushing type? Does that interior blitzing that he can do as a stand-up player, does that keep him on the field longer? That'll be fun to watch. But right now, he's at the height of his career. He's the backbone not just of the Broncos defense, but of that whole team.
All right. I think with that, we move on to the lightning-ish round, the fastest-ish 5 minutes in sports. Let's start with edge player most likely to win defensive player of the year in 2018. Who are you going with, Andy?
Well, let me ask you this way. If we just both said we have Von Miller number one, what would we answer differently? How would we pick someone else then?
I am playing outside factors on this. So you can go Von Miller if you want. I'm going Joey Bosa because of the newness factor for folks who vote. And the fact that I think that the Chargers will win 12-plus games this year and people will be on the Bosa bandwagon.
I don't disagree. I don't mind that at all. I've been on that Bosa bandwagon. He got annoyed a few years ago when people were making J.J. Watt comparisons, and I remember he tweeted that out. I had interviewed him early in the week, and I was planning on the headline saying Joey Bosa's the next J.J. Watt. I didn't tell him that. And he tweeted out the day after I interviewed him and the day before our article was going to run, please stop making the J.J. Watt comparison. They're ridiculous. But I think that's the conversation for him. He hasn't quite achieved what J.J. Watt did when he was owning the NFL 3 or 4 years ago. But he has similar attributes and has a chance to be that kind of impact player where he can disrupt blocking by entire blocking schemes, by the way he moves laterally down the line of scrimmage.
Breakout edge player of 2018.
Give me yours first.
I'm probably going to say Vinny Curry again because I say him every year. I'd throw out Vinny Curry. I'd throw out Leonard Floyd because I think I also said him last year and didn't quite do it. And I think that's it. That's all I want to say.
So when you say throw, throw out, and I always think it means you're not going to include them, but that's what you mean you're throwing them in.
No, I'm throwing their names out there. Basically, I'm saying I don't want to make I don't want to put any strength behind my claims, and I just want to give vague. I want to say like 14 names, and then when one of them is correct, I will congratulate myself.
Yep, that's smart. The guy I would go with is Frank Clark, who I think's already broken out. But I could see him being someone that just all of a sudden he has 18 sacks and everybody thinks, oh my goodness, where did he come from? Where he doesn't actually play a whole lot differently than he has been playing, where he's getting about 10 sacks a year right now. Frank Clark, he's the quickest defensive lineman in football, just pure quickness. He jumps off the screen. If we're talking initial step and coming off the snap, Everson Griffin's very good in that sense, but Griffin's good because he times his jumps so well. Clark is good because he's just so doggone quick. So I'm going to go Frank Clark, who's not a true edge rusher. He is, but they're going to use him at three technique and on slants and stunts and twists and all that stuff in Seattle. But as an edge player, I think Frank Clark's as talented as almost anyone in the NFL.
In the spirit of the lightning-ish round, I want to ask you a quick follow-up. That Seahawks team, Clark obviously is going to be their best edge guy. Do you think they get anything out of Deion Jordan? Well, let's say Deion Jordan, because no one's going to say they're going to get anything out of Marcus Smith or Barkevious Mingo unless something miraculous happens. So do you think Deion Jordan has something left in the tank for them?
Or something in the tank, you mean? We don't know if he ever had any.
yeah.
Barkevious Mingo, why would you throw out to throw in? So why would you throw him in or discard him?
I discarded him just because I don't know if he's really a pure edge guy anymore.
Right, I agree with you. I think Mingo he found his niche finally last year with the Colts, and it was as a hybrid third down weapon in a what we call like a 3-4 type of flex scheme. In other words, Barkevious, line up anywhere in the front seven, and you're going to do a few different things for us, and you're going to be a disguise player. That's very different than playing strictly off the edge. So I agree with you. If Seattle's using him just as an edge bender, and I think they will because they're going to simplify and go back to their foundation of 4-3, cover 3 zone this year, I agree. I wouldn't include Mingo in there. Jordan, I am highly skeptical of that. And Marcus Smith, I don't know if his skills ever really translate to the NFL. Some of these guys, you see the talent, like watching Mingo on film, and when Jordan has been in there when he was a Dolphin, which was not very often at all, you still see on film, oh, that's why they were taking top 5, top 10.
Yeah.
I never saw that with Marcus Smith, who was not, he's taken later in the first round too, so that's probably why you don't see it. But you know what I'm saying? He never looked like a first rounder to me. I'm not over the moon on any of these guys that Seattle has other than Frank Clark, though.
Yeah. Myles Garrett's future, obviously a slightly abbreviated sample size to work with here, 11 games. Is what you saw from last year, does it look like superstar? Does it look like quality player? If you had to project out 3 or 4 years, what's Myles Garrett going to be?
I would project superstar, but I don't know if that means he'll get recognized as one. I think he'll be better than his stats indicate a lot of the time, which the Browns have kind of said already he was last year when they said he should have had more sacks if our coverage had held up more. His hands are fast and violent, and he is bendable as well. And I see he bends really well in confined areas. He doesn't need a lot of space in order to dip and bend. He can get low in traffic. And I think he could also be a very good 3 technique, depending on who you have around him. They don't have a lot of depth or dynamicism at the edge right now, so I think he'll mostly play there. But if they get one or two more edge benders there, or even just a true third down pass rushing specialist, I could see Garrett sliding in and playing defensive tackle and being dominant, kind of like a Michael Bennett almost.
I was going to say, just with the personnel they have there, Ogunjobi is really good on the interior. I feel like Emmanuel Ogba is probably a guy you want to slide inside, just because he doesn't he doesn't have the pure ability on the edge of a Garrett. So is Garrett? I guess it's like you want to move him around, but do you have the personnel where it makes sense to move him around in Cleveland?
Yeah, and they might not, but. Then it gets in Greg Williams. Does he believe in trying to dictate the best matchup for Garrett? If he feels that the opponent has a bad guard, remember Greg Williams blitzes a lot, so he can influence the protections and he can make certain blockers have to block certain guys. And if they want to do that and try to get Garrett matched up on a guard, that would not surprise me to see them go about that.
Last question of the lightning-ish round. Best chance for a bounce back in 2018. I had jotted down Justin Houston and Ziggy Ansah as the two candidates. If you have another candidate, I say feel free to throw it in. But if one of those guys are going to bounce back to superstar levels, who do you think is more likely?
I think Justin Houston's more likely. Houston's who's the guy we say oh, it's Terrell Suggs. Is just a great all-around football player, does everything well. Justin Houston's the other guy who's like that. He's a better run defender than pass rusher, and when he was healthy a few years ago, he had 20-something sacks, if I recall. So I would bet on Justin Houston's football character. He's not very old. He's not young, but he's not aging yet. It's just a matter of if he's healthy or not. Would we consider Vic Beasley up for bounce-back candidacy, Gary? His numbers dipped a little last year.
Yeah, he's interesting. Was he ever sort of at the superstar level when he put up the huge sack numbers?
I don't think he was.
I would have said no. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. I feel like I look at Vic Beasley and just say like, yeah, that's a good B to B plus player, and I think that's what he remains. It's just a question of statistically. How will it bear out? So yeah, I if you think he's in for a breakout, then yeah, stake that claim right now, Andy Benoit.
I don't know if I do. His snaps could very well continue to decrease because they've tried him at other positions here and there. And what they're finding is he really is just a pure edge rusher, which is fine. I mean, yeah. I still think they'd take him in the first round if they'd known that. Mm-hmm. That's how valuable edge rushers can be. But that's the book on him, and he needs space around him. So we said Myles Garrett a second ago is so good in confined areas, and he's violent and explosive. Beasley is an antithetical to that. He needs space around him in order to really thrive. So a wide nine alignment, or when they run stunts and twists, what you'll notice is Beasley covers a lot of ground when he is looping inside as a stunt and twist guy. He's a build-up speed. He's got great initial quickness, but he's also a build-up speed guy. So you have to scheme space for Vic Beasley in order to thrive, and that's fine. They can do that in Atlanta, but just having that caveat that you have to do it that way, that probably removes him from the first tier of edge players in the NFL.
Yeah. All right. That's a wrap for the show. Thanks, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, editor Chris Basil, all the guys at Cadence 13 who make it sound so good. Thank you to Ryan Taylor, our researcher this week, making us sound smart. Appreciate it, Ryan. And thanks to our sponsor, Buffalo Wild Wings. Please support them the way they support our show. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Like we said, send the feedback on the new position ranking show format. A lot of people said you like it. I don't believe you all 100% like it. So if anyone has criticisms of it, let us know. Even if it's not go back to the old way and it's something in between, let us know. You can get us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI. You can write into talkback@themmqb.com, or we're both on Facebook. You can get us there. Or, you know, even if you don't want to criticize us or yell at us, you can just say hi. That'd be nice. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this show, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.